Sunday morning, Fox Sports Radio 98.9 FM and 1340 AM, flagship station of the 2018 Western Conference champion Vegas Golden Knights. I'm Brian Feldman, and this is Out of Line. We are here every Sunday morning at 8 live in the Fox Sports Cardinal Financial Studios here in Las Vegas. The we I'm referring to is myself, along with producer, Lotus Broadcasting personality, and Vegas Golden Knights radio locker room correspondent, Chris Magnum Chapman. We are also streaming on the LV Sports Network, and you can follow the show on Twitter at Adeline 1340 AM, and check out and like the Facebook page. It's easy to find. It's called Adeline. That's O-U-T-T-A-L-I-N-E. If you're brave and want to see us at 8 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday, go ahead and watch the show on Facebook Live. Callers are welcome. The Fox Sports Cardinal Financial Studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
Yeah, What's on Tap comes your way thanks to the Cardinal Financial Company, the first and only choice when looking for answers about home financing. Check out cardinalfinancial.com. On tap, the Vegas Golden Knights took a bad loss. Nightcap features interviews with two of the three Golden Knights that scored, and neither one of them is very happy. You'll hear that in a minute. The Run Rebels go from beating Boise on the road to getting blown out by Fresno State. And we'll talk about that. And fresh off, a late-night sports prognosticator is going to join us. And that is a co-host of Heatwave Sports here in Fox. That's Tommy Barton. And he'll be on in a little bit. And the number one overlooked and two comebacks of more than 20 points are blazing today. And fact, this is all about the GOATs. If you don't know who they are, come on, man. You'll find out soon. What's on tap comes your way thanks to the Cardinal Financial Company, the first and only choice. When looking for answers about home financing, check out cardinalfinancial.com for more information. Nightcap.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
Not to the right point. Jones shoots it. Rebound goes in. It was tipped behind Fleury with Anderson trying to get a piece of the crease. And it is a 1-0 Blue Jackets lead 4 minutes into the game. Schmidt to the right, Marcia still waits, back for Schmidt, right circle, centers, deflected in! Vegas ties the game 1-1, 30 seconds after they fell behind. Vegas gets a defensive zone faceoff win out, they come shorthanded, 2-on-1, Smith on the left with Carlson, couldn't finish, rebound in front for Merrill, he scores! John Merrill shorthanded, and the Knights take a 2-1 lead. Rebound far side. Blue Jackets keep the zone. And now a puck in front. They score! The carom came right to Panarin. And Columbus ties it 2-2. Into the zone. Two men cutting. Score! Cody Eakin! 3-2 Golden Knights. With 10:39 to go in the third. Belmar up the left side. Found the trailer. Cody Eakin. Ryan Reeves crashing the net. He drew the attention. Cody Eakin found the puck. He rips it home. Blue Jackets start the breakout. Atkinson gets the return pass up the right side. McNabb picks him up. Puck on goal. Score! Cam Atkinson. 3-3 tie. Feed from the right. Shot turned away by Fleury. Cam Atkinson hitting for his second of the period. Atkinson again right circle. He shoots. He scores! Cam Atkinson. His second of the period. Power play goal. And the Blue Jackets back on top. 4-3.
That did turn out to be the final tally of the game, 4-3. And, Chris, what a disappointing loss for the Golden Knights. I mean, the first period was as exciting of hockey as I've seen all year, man. Two very similar teams up and down the ice, back and forth. The Jackets scored first. The Knights answered with two tallies. We love seeing John Merrill get his second goal of the season. But I'll tell you what, the second period, it looked like somebody poured wet cement onto the ice. Everyone skated slower. I don't know what happened, and it really changed the course of the game. We talked about it after the game at T-Mobile, and really, this team outplayed them in the neutral zone. And really, if you want to look for a better term, they outbullied the Golden Knights.
Well, Columbus is a team that the Golden Knights struggled with early in the season. They got shut out in Columbus. Great. Malcolm Subban played great in that game, by the way, but team couldn't put any points up on the board for him. But last night, a little bit of a different story. You know, it was just a really weird game because the first goal was really fluky. Golden Knights challenge for goaltender interference. Didn't see it. Not sure what they saw, but you know what? I mean, Gallant, he's won a bunch of those in the past. There was contact, but I thought it was well after the puck was behind Fleury. So they lost their timeout, which could have maybe proved crucial there in the third period when they were down 4-3.
No doubt.
But even the goal Schmidt scored, he shot it in. It deflected off of Pierre-Luc Dubois' skate into the net. Second goal was a shorthanded goal by John Merrill, which is the first of his career, first time he's ever scored a shorthanded goal.
What a great goal that was, too.
Well, the whole play was great because Carlson...
Well, you know, Smith brought it in.
And Carlson had the shot, distracted Bobrovsky. It went right to Merrill, who happened to just basically put it in an open net.
Yep.
The third goal, the Columbus goal, or the second Columbus goal, was kind of fluky as well because Fleury misplayed a puck behind the net, and it basically bounced right over the net, right into the stick of Panarin, who, again, had an open net. The third goal was a great goal, though. Belmar came up through the left side there, and he found Eakin for the one-timer who blasted it past Bobrovsky. I mean, it was a great, great setup, great play, great pass.
Yep.
You're like, all right, these guys are in business. 5 minutes to go. They give up the goal to Atkinson, which was a great individual effort by Atkinson. You know, Braden McNabb, I like Braden McNabb. I think he's such an underrated player. He doesn't get a lot of the credit he deserves, but he had a tough game last night. And Atkinson got by him and right to Fleury, and he was able to put it in past Fleury. I think that's when Fleury would like back. And then the fourth goal, look, it was just a great effort, again, by Cam Atkinson, power play goal. Really bad penalty, I thought, by Paul Stastny, too.
You,
to take a slash, and he takes a lot of slashing penalties. And I'm not quite sure if it's because he's an older guy, he's been around a long time. Remember, the rules changed on slashing them 2 seasons ago. And it almost makes you wonder if he hasn't been able to adjust because of the new rules in regards to slashing. But really an inopportune time to take a slashing penalty. I thought the Golden Knights were outplayed. I know Coach Gallant said he was happy with the first and third period. Didn't like the second period, which is why Zykov and Nosek did not play a shift at all in the third period. He was double shifting Reeves and Carrier. So I think, I'll be perfectly honest, I've said it in the past, I think they have some problems, and it begins and ends with the third line.
Max, I agree with that 100%. I think everyone's talked about the issues they've had with the third line. Also, last night, you and I talked about it. The worst game I've ever seen Braden McNabb play for the Vegas Golden Knights.
Yeah, I mean, and
he
and
really seemed off his game.
He's a good player, and he doesn't ever get the credit he deserves. Look, he had a bad night. It happens. Marc-Andre Fleury had a bad night.
Yeah,
it happens. You know, I thought the first line played really well. Carlson and Riley Smith and Marchessault. They played fine. I thought the Tuck, Pacioretty, Stastny line, maybe they could have played a little bit better.
I thought Riley Smith avoided some contact last night. Well, I really
think,
did.
But I think that's I don't think Riley Smith is a guy who goes out and seeks contact.
But either. I haven't seen him literally shy away from it. He just accepts it. It's part of the game. And last night, I really thought they seemed a bit intimidated by Columbus. And Columbus played a much more physical hockey game than the Golden Knights. And you pointed out, that is a team that is going to give them problems. A team that will have show more physicality and a team that is going to outplay them in the middle of the ice, which is the neutral zone, is really a problem. Well, and this is a type of team that's going to cause them fits.
They're very. I found them to be very similar to Minnesota. A team that can match their speed, a team that can play physical because they're big, and a team that can take away the neutral zone. I mean, let's be real. You and I both watched that entire game, and outside of the Cody Eakin goal, what shots did they have on Bobrovsky that really made him work?
No, not a lot, but they, don't take anything away from him. He didn't have to work a lot last night, but he was a hell of a goaltender.
No, he's a great goalie. Yeah. But, you know, the thing was, outside of the tuck play where he came in one-on-one, and I thought maybe he made one too many moves, and look, that happens. I'm not going to blame anyone for that. But that's really the only play where Bobrovsky had to really be on top of his game because...
There was nothing he could do about the Merrill goal. Yeah. Absolutely nothing he could do about that.
There weren't a lot of high... I don't want to say...
High percentage shots.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I can't really recall too many shots. I mean, they were really taken out of their game in the second period. And...
Well, you know, one of the things, too, that surprised me, I can't remember who hit him, but behind the net, Shea Theodore got cross-checked.
It was Boone Jenner. Took it right in the face.
I am sorry. You have got to throw your gloves off when that happens. You hit me like that, Mags. Well, I don't care if it's Ryan Reeves. I'm going to get my ass beat, but my gloves are going on the ground. That was a wicked cross-check, and I know he was hurting. He did kind of retaliate a bit, but come on, man. Show some balls and drop your gloves. That was a ridiculous, dirty-ass hit.
It was a dirty hit. You know, he took the stick right to the face.
Yeah.
You know, he did retaliate a little bit, but you know what? Here's the thing. That's not Shea Theodore's game. He's not going to fight. Someone else.
You have to show.
Someone else, I think, needs to let Boone Jenner know that that's not going to be accepted.
Maybe Derek England step in and mix it up a little bit because he was out there also.
Yeah,
and he did nothing. You know, Ryan Reeves is always going to mix it up. If he's on the ice or anywhere close to him, you know he's going to get into it. And Will Carrier's the same type of player.
And earlier in the year, you know what? They played Ottawa. Cody Eakin took a cheap shot. And of all the guys, John Merrill stepped in and fought. It wasn't a favorable matchup for him. It was his first career fight. But... there was another play in the game, and I don't know if you'll recall it, but Jonathan Marchessault was hit behind the net in the third period, took a big shot, and went down awkwardly into the boards. He kind of skated slowly with his head down to the bench. He didn't look the same after that, and I'll say this. No trainer came over and looked at him?
Yeah, you know, I totally remember seeing that.
Because he went off in the middle of his shift.
Yeah, I said that to Alan Snell sitting there. I said, he's hurt. Jonathan Marchessault was hurt. And nothing was, there was no really attention called to him. He came out after the game and was one of the players that talked to the media.
So I'm guessing he was fine.
But he did, you're right, he did. And, you know, maybe it was just a little bit more of the intimidation factor, Chris. Maybe the same thing happened to him. He was playing a little bit different than Jonathan Marchessault. Jonathan's a small guy, and we've always marveled at his physicality.
He's not afraid to mix it up.
Absolutely not. Love the guy. Listen, I want to get some interviews. You did get a chance to talk to John Merrill after he scored a second goal of the season, as you mentioned, his first shorthanded tally of his career. And we're so happy for the guy. John Merrill is one of the nicest guys on this team. Well, and I'm always happy when he does something
well. The reality is, John Merrill is playing really good hockey.
Oh, the best hockey of his career.
And unfortunately, the fans, for whatever reason, they get on John Merrill. John Merrill is a good hockey player. You know, and he's finally playing with a lot of confidence. You could see it in his game.
Yeah.
He's not taking a lot of bad penalties. Look, John Merrill's been one of my favorite guys in the locker room for 2 years. I'm not going to hide that. But the guy's playing really good hockey, and he was rewarded last night. First of all, for him to be out there on the PK, it says the coaching staff has a lot of confidence in him. And he was rewarded. He got the shorthanded goal, only the ninth goal of John Merrill's career. First shorthanded goal, only his second shorthanded point of his career, too.
And he made no mistake.
John, just in your words, what happened there in that third period, the final couple minutes?
Obviously, I'm a good player, and Atkinson had a couple nice plays, and that's the difference in the game. You know, obviously, he's got a lot of speed, and got in on the half breakaway there and made a nice play. And then obviously on the power play, it's a great shot. Sometimes you just got to tip your cap.
How difficult of a team are they to play against? Because it seems like they clog the neutral zone. They got a lot of size and speed. Just how tough is it to play against a team like that?
Yeah, they're a hardworking team. You know, they're well coached, obviously, and they compete. So obviously they're a tough team to play against. But we got to get back to the drawing board and try and get some wins here.
Now going back to before the bye week, three straight games you guys have lost in this building. I don't think that's happened ever. What do you have to do to get back on the winning track Tuesday?
You know, just believe in our game, believe in ourselves, stick together as a group, and come out with a strong effort next game.
And then on the positive side, your goal, just kind of break that down for us.
Yeah, Smitty and Carly went on a rush, and I just tried to get up in the play, and fortunate the puck bounced right to my stick and just tried to put it on net.
All right, John, thanks.
Thank you.
Johnny Merrill, man, good talking to him, and, you know, he gave you the best he could. I got a chance after the game to talk to one of the other goal scorers. I mentioned three goals scored, Schmidt, Merrill, and Cody Eakin got the first tally in the third period that put the Golden Knights back on top 3-2. And then, of course, the final two goals in the third period scored both by Atkinson, and they win the game. But Cody Eakin, not the easiest guy to talk to, especially after a loss. Got me stumbling a bit, but I think it was only the second time I've ever interviewed him, because he's not the greatest interview, just going to say, but I'll tell you what, one of the best work ethics on the Golden Knights, and this is a guy, the one thing you, when you talk to the players about Cody Eakin, he never takes a shift off, and I think that is a very fair assessment of this guy. Every time I see him, he's hustling towards the puck, he's disruptive, he makes the proper forecheck when he has to, and, you know, he's not a guy that's going to drop the gloves and fight, but he's also a guy a little bit like Marceau in that he'll take all the hits you dish out and keep coming.
Well, he's a tough player, you know. He does a lot of things the right way. You know, he's the kind of guy, he's not going to go out there, he's not going to take a lot of stupid penalties, but he's not going to hurt you in any way when he's out there on the ice. I mean, he doesn't do anything bad. He's not flashy. He's got 15 goals on the season.
Yeah, you're never going to see him be Thomas Nosek and not play in the third period for his ineptness. I saw Thomas Nosek twice just play terrible last night, and I totally understood why we didn't see him in the third period. But play Eakin, I got a chance to talk to him right after the game. I walked up to him when he came out, and you could tell by the first answer, it was a one-word answer, and I think it was something like sucks.
Cody Eakin, tough loss, man. Tough way to lose this one.
Yeah, it sucks. You got a goal tonight early on. It looked like things, you guys, especially the first period, seemed to be skating really well. Second period, really the game seemed to slow down a lot.
Yeah, we didn't bring our best second period. We let them dictate the play, and you know, some turnovers, and just kind of irresponsible hockey a little bit. So yeah, they got some momentum. At the end, we couldn't hold on.
You know, quickly you got to put this one behind you. It is one game, but it is kind of bittersweet to lose it that way. Is it just right back to the drawing board and next game up?
Yeah, we need a better effort, I think. Full 60 is what it takes to win any given night. So we'll watch that, then throw it out, and be ready for the next one.
Cody, you had those. Yeah, you know, when I said bittersweet, what I mean by that is, you know, they played with the lead most of the game. They went behind 1-0, tie game, but most of the game they were right there to win it. And what I thought at the last 5 minutes of the game, they made the cardinal mistake you don't make in sports. In every sport, you see it in football. They call it the bend but don't break defense, or the prevent when you're ahead and you're just trying not to give up the lead. And it looked like at the end of the game, the Golden Knights were skating a little bit on their heels, and they were trying not to lose. They were playing not to lose. And when you do that, typically bad things happen, and they did.
Yeah, I don't know if they played not to lose, but I saw a team that was better than them. I mean, I think that's really, you know, the Columbus Blue Jackets, look, you can knock them all they want for not winning in the playoffs, but John Tortorella is a really good coach, and that's a really good team. Their first line is really, really good. Panarin, Pierre-Luc Dubois, and Cam Atkinson. Cam Atkinson can flat out
fly.
And, you know, I mean, look, they're a solid team. They've got a really good goaltender. They've got a Norris Trophy caliber defenseman in Seth Jones, who, for whatever reason, does not get the credit he deserves from a lot of fans. I mean, he is a great, great defenseman. Like I said, Norris Trophy caliber defenseman. So, you know, they're a really good team, and they're well coached. You can see those guys really like playing for Tortorella. I think Tortorella's a guy a lot of people don't like, you know, fans, because he's very honest and he's very vocal, and he gives you exactly how he feels. I like Tortorella. I would love to cover John Tortorella if I was in Columbus, because I think he'd be a lot of fun as a coach to cover it. I think that team, they don't do a lot of things flashy, but they're a good hockey team. And
they're right there in the Metropolitan Division, Mags. They had more points last night. I think they had 63 points on the season.
And everyone forgets, they were up 2-0 on the Capitals before Washington went on their amazing run.
This is a team that I said last night, watching it again, and every time I see them, they could cause problems for somebody in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And as you mentioned, a couple of great players. But again, they've got a goaltender that if this guy gets hot, this team, the sky's the limit.
Well, yeah, I think he won the Vezina Trophy 2 years ago, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, this is a good hockey team. So fans might be disappointed that they lost last night the way they lost. But look, don't take anything away from Columbus. That's a really good team. In 2 games this year, they've deserved to beat the Golden Knights. I thought they've outplayed the Golden Knights in both games, and there's a reason why they won both games this season.
Yeah, well, I think you come back from a four-game road trip, and this is the kind of thing that's happening. And Gallant said it in the press conference. He said, you know, he expected the way they played in the second period to play that way in the first period because of the road, kind of a road lag, for a lack of a better term. But, you know, Chris, where does this leave this team right now? Looking ahead, obviously they've got three more games at home before they go on the road again. These next 3 games are crucial, in my opinion. You got to beat the Coyotes and get the 2 points against that team. I know they play them tough. Coyotes are a team that you have to beat. The Toronto Maple Leafs have a very special player in Austin Matthews.
Well, they've got a lot of special players.
They do, and they are going to be a very tough team. But that is a game at home that I think the Golden Knights would give them a tremendous amount of confidence going forward.
Well, that's
and of
a course, statement game.
Yeah, it is. And then Nashville, right after it, is another game that I think they need to win.
Well, yeah, I think there's 25 games left on the season, and I think 19 of them are against teams that are either in a playoff spot or within 2 points of a playoff spot. So anyone who thinks, oh, the Golden Knights have a lot of home games, they should just cruise. Look, they're in a good position because it would take a lot for them to not make the playoffs. But I'm being perfectly honest. I don't think they're as good as they were last year. Maybe on paper.
They're better on paper.
Maybe
they
on
really
paper
are.
They're better. But I think the problem is the other teams around them in the division are also better.
And, Mags, let's be honest. The chip isn't on their shoulders that it was last year. And no matter what you say, you can't put it back there. They had something to prove last year, and they did, unequivocally.
Well,
now,
you know, I'll say this. When I was in Sweden, I talked to Jason Garrison, former Golden Knight. He was playing for the team in Sweden. And I kind of asked him a little bit about it, and not the chip, but he said he knew right away that this was a good team. He knew right away there were a lot of really good players on this team. So I'm not so sure I'm going to buy the chip on the shoulder thing, because I think they're a good team, and I think they proved last year that they're a good team.
Mag, come on. I mean, I'll tell you right now, there were some times last year that Marc-Andre Fleury, as good as he is, one of the best goaltenders in hockey when he's on his game, I've never seen a guy play for stretches like he did last year.
Do you think he's tired?
We talked about it earlier, man. Was he overplayed? Did Gallant? And I said, and I still don't know 100%, but I still pray that the conversations between Gerard Gallant and Marc-Andre Fleury this year, that Gallant would go to him and say, hey, Mark, why don't you take a night off? And Fleury said, no, man, I want to go between the pipes. Because I would believe that Gallant would give him the respect to ask him that and let him play. Because if not, if Gallant's just putting him in there without that conversation, man, yes, he played too many games this season. But like I said, out of respect, if Gallant was asking him and he wanted to play and Gallant was riding it, I'll be okay with that. But yeah, and I think, man, right now you've got 25 games left. Please make sure this guy is rested for the playoffs. I'm not saying that guys like Malcolm Subban or Maxime Lagasse can't come in and play great goaltender. But in the Stanley Cup playoffs last year, the bottom line is without Marc-Andre Fleury, this team might not get past the LA Kings. So please give this guy some rest. I don't care if he wants to play or not. Give him rest. He still is in a 35, 36-year-old body, a lot of concussions deep into his career, and we are going to need him, or I should say the Vegas Golden Knights are going to need him tremendously going forward, or this team is definitely not going to do what they did last year. Yes, they'll make the playoffs, but they could easily be one and done if Marc-Andre Fleury isn't at his best come postseason, because this team has showed us at times, as many shots as they put on net, they have struggled to score. And if that happens in the postseason, and it did a couple times last year, they are going to have to rely on that last line of defense, which is one of the best in hockey when he's on his game. We'll see. The reasons not to worry, hey, all these guys, the majority of this team, has Stanley Cup Finals experience, and that can be a tremendous asset when the postseason gets here, that these guys have been there. And just last year, to me, that would be the one reason not to be concerned, is experience goes a long way in the postseason. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about UNLV basketball. All I can say is, wow, Tommy Barton is going to join the show in a little bit. And also, we are going to talk about the GOATs. And I'm wearing a jersey. If you're watching Facebook Live, you'll know about the GOATs. But I'm wearing the jersey I've just given in. And the guy's the GOAT. And the guy that coaches him is the GOAT. And that should give you all that you need to know. You are listening to Fox Sports Radio. This is Out of Line. I'm Brian Feldman, and we'll be right back. Wow. Well, Chris, I'll tell you, man, UNLV basketball, it's a head-scratcher. It really is. I've been saying all year that the Mountain West is the twilight zone of college basketball, because other than one team, which is, of course, that team up north, as you like to refer to it as, the University of Reno, it is them and everybody else. And yes, occasionally Reno plays down to their competition, and that's what happened in the Pit in New Mexico. Boise did play Reno in a close game for a minute, but the bottom line is this team is head and shoulders above everyone else, and every team in the conference, if they played them 10 times, they would win 10 out of 10 times, except maybe a team like Utah State or a Fresno State, or we saw New Mexico, might surprise them at home, but it's not going to happen often. The bottom line is this is a one-bid league unless somebody can find a way to knock off Reno in the Mountain West Conference Tournament. Otherwise, there is no doubt, just like last year, San Diego State got in for one reason, because they beat Reno and they won the Mountain West Conference Championship over New Mexico. That's the only way it happens again this year. And this league, Chris, which I'm amazed, is worse this year than it was last year.
Yeah. Unfortunately for the Mountain West Conference, the glory days of this conference appear to be behind them. You've lost some really good coaches in this conference. And look, I was never a big Steve Alford fan. Losing him hurt. Lon Kruger, obviously losing him hurt. He took Oklahoma to a Final Four.
Even Rodney Terry, Chris.
Well, Rodney Terry left and went to UTEP.
Yep.
And I haven't really followed them to see what they're doing. Steve Fisher, retired, right? Stu Morrill, who was at Utah State, I think when they came into the conference, he retired. So he lost Utah. Gone, right? Perennial Mountain West Conference Tour or Champions every
year. What about next year when losing all these kids from Reno go pro, man? How bad is this league going to be?
Like,
Musselman's going to be gone, too.
Well, I would have to imagine, because I can't imagine he's ever going to get anything better than what he's got now.
No.
And the thing is, they're not exactly getting respect among the committee, because I've seen them floating around as about a 4 seed, which I think was about what they were going to get, because they're not Gonzaga. You have to earn that. It's taken Gonzaga a long time to get to that spot where they are a high seed in the NCAA tournament year in and year out. I mean, the conference isn't very good. I will say this. The three teams that are first, second, and third in the conference, they are head and shoulders above everyone else, and they're separating themselves, because I think, you know, when you look at 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, there's not a whole lot that really separates UNLV from New Mexico or Boise from Air Force or San Diego State from Boise. Even Fresno, I think, is a little bit closer to...
Then Fresno's very well coached.
Well, and Hudson's a great coach.
Great coach.
But, you know, it goes back to things. You know, we've been having conversations with people we know. And you and me and Brian Salmon from Channel 3, we're all on the same side. None of us are saying that Menzies is going to be the coach that wins an NCAA championship or makes UNLV a top 25 team. My problem is I don't know if he isn't. I don't know if he is. I don't
know
if he isn't.
Here's the thing, Chris.
But, you know, we talk about all the time. It's instant gratification. People want results right now. What they fail to realize is Marvin Menzies walked into maybe the worst disaster any program this caliber has experienced in a long, long time. I mean, you have to go back a really, really, really long time to find a team as bad as what Marvin Menzies took over.
Oh, my God.
I mean, there was not only a mass exodus of coaches, there was a mass exodus of players.
He had basically two players left, and here's what I'm going to say, and I'm going to expound on what you said a little, even more. The bottom line is, come on. This guy walked into a horrible situation. He knew he was a consolation prize.
Yeah.
I mean, they absolutely didn't want him. They offered the guy that walked away from them after he signed a contract, right after to go to Texas Tech, $900,000. And then they go back to Menzies and throw $150,000 less at him at $750,000. And let me tell you something. They're not paying anybody more than that. $900,000 is the cap that the Board of Regents is going to allow them to spend on a coach. Who the hell are you going to get to replace Marvin Menzies for $900,000? Would Thad Matta come for $900,000 maybe?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, he would take the job, but I still think he'd want 1.1.
Well, here's the thing with Thad Matta. What are his ties to the West Coast?
None.
So,
but I mean, people keep throwing his name around like he's a guy that wants this job, and I could see it. He's probably the biggest name out there that they might be able to get right now.
And that's the thing. Look, if
but you're just reaching.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Everyone wants to pile on Tina Kunzer-Murphy. I'm going to defend her. I'm going to defend Tina Kunzer-Murphy. She made the right hire. She hired Chris Beard. She had zero control over the Board of Regents dragging their feet for 2.5 weeks to get this guy's contract approved.
Very true.
That's not her fault. And Chris Beard leaving to go to Texas Tech, that's not her fault. You want to blame somebody? You blame the idiots at Georgia Tech who hired Josh Pastner from Memphis. Pastner is a joke. In the 3 years he's been at Georgia Tech, they went 21-16, failed to make the NCAA tournament. 13-19, finished 13th in the ACC. This year in the ACC, 3-7 in the conference, 11-12 overall. By the way, this is coming off an 18-14 and a 19-15 season at Georgia Tech or at Memphis.
Yeah.
So you want to blame somebody? You blame that idiotic school and those stupid administrators for hiring a joke who was garbage at Memphis, and then it started a chain reaction. Tubby Smith left Texas Tech to go coach Memphis, where he got fired. Chris Beard's the only one who came out of this.
Yeah, open the door. Smelling like
of the four programs,
smelling like roses.
He's the only one who's come out of it successful.
Yeah, one thing I'll say, Chris, and we'll go to break on this. I am going to say that, yes, Tina Kunzer-Murphy has taken some undue wrath for this whole thing. But the bottom line is, and no one's going to disagree, including you, Tina Kunzer-Murphy is not an athletic director that is going to take a school to the next level. She was someone that fit in. She worked very hard. She was at every event. She was a great handshaker. She was a great public person, a public figure to go out and talk to people. But she wasn't the answer. I'm not sure Desiree Reed-Francois is the answer. She wouldn't get another job this big anywhere in the country. She'd go back to a lesser role at a bigger university. I'm sure she'd love to get out of here because she realizes she has no power. She saw it when Fertitta tweeted out that money might not be coming in if Tony Sanchez doesn't retain his position as the UNLV football coach, and she realized right then, I have no power. Now, there's nobody in Menzies' corner like that, which is why you might end up seeing him fired, because public opinion and a lot of the boosters want him gone, and I'm going to continue to say it is unfair. No idea if he's the man for the job, and my gut tells me he's not. But still, you don't fire the guy. Give him a chance for this team. You are listening to Out of Line. This is Fox Sports Radio. We are going to come back on the other side with Tommy Barton. We're going to talk some college basketball, and we're going to talk about goats. 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot. This is why. It is time for Blazin', brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 in North Durango. Two happy hours every day. They are a stone's throw from Centennial Hills Hospital. That's Montecito Crossing Plaza, 215 in North Durango. America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports. And during football season, I am up there every Monday night hosting their Monday night football party. It's a great time. We give away replica jerseys, memorabilia, wing parties. It's fun. And, of course, we host a live Super Bowl party. If you checked it out last week, I appreciate all the listeners that came down last week to our live event Sunday morning, the morning of the Super Bowl. It was pretty cool. We had a great time. Want to thank the NFL alumni guys that came out. Of course, Mike Jones, who made the great tackle in the Super Bowl that won the Rams their only Super Bowl. And also want to thank, of course, Brett Raymer from the show Tank that was down there last week giving away all the night gear stuff. We really, really appreciated it. And it was a great time. And of course, thanks to Buffalo Wild Wings for being a sponsor of the show for so long, keeping us on the air, man. I definitely appreciate them. But Blazin' right now, I've got to say that, and by the way, joining us on the line, I want to bring him up from Heatwave Sports. What I love about his prognostication is the fact that Tommy Barton tells it like it is. When he has a crappy week, he'll tell you, man, I had a bad week. He doesn't have very many of them, and he is definitely over the top as far as getting great picks. I listen to the show to steal a few for myself, but the bottom line is you don't hear Tommy saying, oh, I went 11-0 6 weeks in a row. It doesn't happen, and nobody does, and yet some people claim to do that. Tommy, what's up, man? Up there. Hello, hello. Chris is going to give him a buzz back. But you know what I was going to say, what's blazing, and we'll get Tommy on the phone for that, is the Tennessee Volunteers, man. You know, I'm watching, all people wanted to talk about yesterday was the Duke-Virginia game, 2-3, and I understand it because everyone's wondering, can anybody besides Duke, but besides Duke, beat Virginia? Because, of course, you know, Virginia in the ACC has only lost three games all of last year and this year to this point. Two of those three to Duke. Last year they lost to Virginia Tech. Bennett's got it going on there, and he has since he's been there. He is an unbelievable defensive-minded coach, and Virginia perennially has one of the best defenses in the country. It's actually fun to watch because they play such tenacious defense. Nothing they could do against Duke, but again, what's blazing to me is people just continue to overlook the Volunteers. And again, Tommy Barton now on the line, Heatwave Sports. And Tommy, why do people continue to overlook Tennessee? Is it because Rick Barnes maybe underachieved at Texas with some of those teams that were supposed to get to the Final Four, were a 1 or 2 seed, and he just couldn't do it? Because this Tennessee team, I'll tell you what, the big three on this Tennessee team, individually, these guys, Grant Williams, Admiral Schofield, or Jordan Bone, would be a star on any team in the country. And I'm including the Duke Blue Devils, the Kentucky Wildcats, the Kansas Jayhawks. These guys are that good. And yet, for some reason, they just don't get the respect at 22 now and 1 overall, and 10-0 in the Southeastern Conference as they beat Florida again yesterday. What is it going to take for people to start believing that Tennessee is a team like Virginia that maybe can play with and beat Duke?
I'm one of those people. I'm one of those people that don't buy into Tennessee. It's a very, very, very simple answer. Go out there and beat Kentucky. I mean, it's just that simple. Look, the SEC is continually, year after year after year, underrated in college basketball landscape. People overlook Florida for years, and they obviously not overlook Kentucky, but Auburn, South Carolina, you had some good teams over the course of the years that get overlooked, and it's always because if you have a big dog, and Kentucky is the big dog, you've got to knock them off. I'm in a position where I agree with people. Look, I do not believe that Tennessee is a top five team in the country. I don't believe that they're making a Final Four run. Now, does that mean that being, you know, inside the top 10 is a bad thing? No, not at all. But it depends on what level of respect you want to give them. They are not the Dukes. They're not the Virginias. They're not, that top echelon. But they could get there with one game. They have Kentucky two more times this year. All you need to do is beat Kentucky once, not even twice. You beat them once, people like me will be convinced.
You know, this team, though, together, as I said, this big three, strength, they've got speed, skill, intelligence, and a lot of swag. I really like this team, and I'll tell you what, Jordan Bone is, to me, one of the most outstanding lead guards in the country, and especially this last month. He has been, as far as distributing the basketball, I don't know that there's a better distributor in the college game right now than Jordan Bone of Tennessee. I do think they can make some noise, but again, to me, the biggest issue is the guy that I said, it's Rick Barnes. I love his ability to coach during the college regular season, but he's never been known as a great tournament coach. How much does that affecting you where you're kind of saying to me that Tennessee's a house of cards?
Yeah, I mean, that's huge. That's absolutely huge. I will tell you this, look, the way that I tell people to just blindly go about the tournament, if you don't want to do too much research, you blindly go on a coaching resume. And when you're blindly going on a coaching resume, his resume falls massively short with the guys that he's trying to compete with. Now, I'm not telling you Tennessee's a bad team. I don't think they're going out in the first weekend. But what I'm saying is that when you start putting him up against, the leaders, think about the leaders, even the Jay Wrights of the world. You know, Jay Wright and Coach K and even Bennett, who had a failure in the tournament. He's just falling short. So in the crop that he's trying to establish, he had a great year. No matter what happens at the end of this year, this is a great year for Tennessee. It's got people talking. It's got us talking about them.
No
doubt.
But
I think if you're looking to find them sitting in this Final Four, I think you're going to be disappointed. And it's not even one thing. I think it's lack of experience, it's lack of pedigree, and it's lack of coaching that will get them there. I don't think it's one thing and one answer. And getting to the Elite Eight or even the Sweet 16 is not a bad problem. But if Tennessee is the number one seed, and they don't get to the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight, that'll feel like a disappointment to people.
Well, no question. The body of work they put in and the way they played, one loss to this point, but you are right. Kentucky is going to be the game that they have targeted on the games they have targeted on their schedule because that is the cream of the crop. And Calipari is in my opinion, and not just my opinion, most experts across the country, one of the best regular season and tournament coaches around. Whenever somebody says it's hard to coach one and dones, talk to John Calipari. That's all the guy's done throughout his career and with tremendous success. But the Virginia-Duke game, everyone anticipated it last night. Duke gets another 10-point win. Duke is not going to continuously hit 13 threes. I mean, it was amazing, their perimeter game, because it's funny. Virginia packed the paint with that pack line defense, and they kept Duke from getting, these drives. And Duke got some drives, and they did get some things done in transition. But the story of this game was Duke is, again, really knocked down threes like crazy. 8 of 11 from three-point land in the first half. They wound up hitting 13, as I mentioned, for the game. Just a sick shooting performance. Virginia played well enough to win that game on the offensive end for them, but Duke just made too many shots, and they were big shots. Duke does such a good job on the offensive end in getting to the lane and getting to the rim, and Virginia took that totally away yesterday. But again, Duke just kept knocking down threes. Tommy, who out there can beat Duke? And I mean, Zion Williamson, this dude is a game changer. And if the New York Knicks end up with him number one, I think he'll do a lot more for this New York Knicks team than Patrick Ewing did when he changed the structure of the NBA draft.
Wow, that is a big statement. I'll tell you, I'm down on Williamson as a impact, massive NBA player. I think he'll be good. But he seems to be a little bit of a tweener to me, where you can't really play him at the four. He's going to get bigger. He doesn't exactly have a great outside game. He's got a decent one, but he takes, maybe he'll hit two or three threes during the course of the game. As far as going into what you're talking about, who can beat Duke, I will tell you that if you sit down with Coach Tony Bennett tomorrow and you ask him, would you play that game again exactly the same way, he's going to go, I'll play it 10 times in a row, and I'm going to win 8 of those games. But remember, Magic Johnson's team in college actually lost. You know, they lost one game playing the kind of the 1-3-1 zone. Why? Because, this other team hit something like 80% from three-point range. Sometimes you just get those we're going to dare you to hit the threes, and they're hitting them. I think Virginia played a great game yesterday. When you talked about it, they took away the biggest strength. But you got to hope that the other team misses. More times than not, a team will never get that hot. I think that Virginia can beat them if they had to match up again. I think Kentucky is a team, and I'm not a Kentucky fan by any stretch of the imagination. I think Kentucky is a team that's going to give them problems. I think Kentucky is growing into itself right now, becoming kind of that team. I wouldn't be surprised if there was a team, you know, like a North Carolina in the tournament that just put up 113 points, that just says, all right, listen, you guys want to run, let's run, and they go absolutely crazy. I know Duke, they're ranked 13th in defense in college, but that 13th is a little bit misleading when you look at some of the competition that they've put up the big numbers against. I think you could score on Duke, and Virginia proved that, who's not an offensive team. They could score on Duke, and some of those teams, a team like North Carolina, I could see giving them a problem. A team like Kentucky, I could see them giving them a problem.
I can't argue with you. I just, you know, the same thing we're saying about Rick Barnes, I say about Bennett. I love what the guy does in the regular season, but for some reason, that team is a choking team in the tournament. But his team's as good this year as they have been, and defensively, every year, they pose a challenge for everyone they play against. And it doesn't matter. If you're a team that plays on the perimeter, Virginia can get out and defend it, and we already see what they can do to an inside game. They can completely disrupt it and tear it apart. We will move on from here. Tommy, there's something I wanted to talk about, and I'm wearing a jersey today. I said the end of the show is going to be about the GOATs, so go ahead, Mags, hit it.
Facts this. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
It's a fact that after this year's Super Bowl, there should absolutely be no more doubt that Bill Belichick and Tom Brady are the GOATs of their craft. This is no longer just an opinion. This is what it is. Tommy, talk to me. Do you concur, or are you choosing to oppose that statement?
I concurred about 4 years ago. I thought that the conversation was over. And the big guy that everybody keeps bringing up is obviously Joe Montana. Joe Montana. Why? Because he's 4-0 in the playoffs. I mean, in the Super Bowl. But let's talk about the playoffs. People forget about the playoffs. Joe Montana is 16-7 in the playoffs. Tom Brady's 30-10. It's not even close. You know, there is the argument of, well, he's undefeated. But where do you just get that cutoff? Where do you start to say, hey, look, he failed to get them to anymore? I'm sorry. I know everybody loves Joe Montana, and I do too. But there's a point where he had other opportunities. It's not like Joe Montana went to 4 playoffs in, 4 years and then has 4-0. No, that didn't happen, guys. He had 23 chances. He failed 7 times. Tom Brady had 40 chances and failed 10 times, guys. That is an unbelievable number. And the idea that this Super Bowl wasn't exactly, you know, Tom Brady's best, I go completely the other way. I think that this was the epitome of greatness on display, not because of the numbers, because what they asked him to do. Imagine turning around to a guy like Aaron Rodgers, okay, who's got an ego the size of Green Bay, and saying to him, okay, listen, you're the greatest of all time, going to a Super Bowl, we're taking the ball out of your hands, and we're going to run the ball with a rookie, and with a guy, in Rex Burkhead, who came from Cincinnati. I mean, this is what they did. And Brady said, I don't care, that's cool, game flow, whatever. And that's how he played this game, much like he played the first couple of years of his career. He's able to put up 500 yards in a Super Bowl last year, and this year be a game manager. To me, that's leadership, and that makes him the GOAT even more than the statistics do.
Yeah. He is Tommy Barton, sports prognosticator, co-host of Heatwave Sports Saturday and Sunday late nights here on Fox Sports Radio Las Vegas. Tommy, appreciate you on the show. Definitely check out him and Tim Unglesby, man. I listen to him every week. Some really good stuff. They go at it, and they pull no punches, man. You want to hear the truth about UNLV, that's one of the shows to listen to. Listen, my point, Tommy, is this. Tom Brady is now 41 years old and just stayed healthy through an entire NFL season and led his team to another Super Bowl win. He has now played in 17% of all the Super Bowls ever played, which is absolutely staggering. And I will say this, in my opinion, when you mentioned Joe Montana, this is me. If I have one game to win and I've got every quarterback on my axis that's healthy, I would probably start Montana with Brady on the bench. But to say that Brady's not the greatest of all time, that is an absolutely absurd statement. The body work And Bill Belichick, we're out of time, Tommy, but Bill Belichick, the greatest of all time as well. That is the GOAT. Hey, lost his defense coordinator. Wow, could they still play defense? Listen, this is Out of Line. I want to thank Tommy Barton. I want to thank John Merrill. And I also want to thank Cody Eakin for giving us some time. Out of Line is here every Sunday morning, 8 to 9 on Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, home of the 2018 Western Conference champion, Golden Knights. We'll be back next week. Again, appreciate you, Tommy. We'll see you, man.
He's gone.
He's gone. We're out.